chantait. Et puis papa, du fun, il y en avait.
Il y en avait pour tout le monde.
Il y en avait pour tout le monde.
Vive le bonhomme de la maison qui était pas mal en air.
Vive le bonhomme de la maison qui était pas mal en air.
Chanson, il a fallu faire chorus.
Tout le monde riait, puis me chantait. Et puis papa, du fun, il y en avait.
Il y en avait pour tout le monde.
Il y en avait pour tout le monde.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Some music this afternoon to open this portion of the program from the Québécois group Les Bertines Sorions. I hope I'm doing justice to the French here. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, we're going to hear about a summit of leaders and youth from the world's French-speaking countries. The 8th Francophonie Summit took place last month in New Brunswick, Canada. Our guest is Susan Baldry, a former teacher of French and Spanish. She is a foreign language consultant and freelance journalist. She attended the summit, which was held in the city of Moncton. We'll talk with her about issues raised during the summit. We'll also hear something about the people around the world who speak French. As we talk, I hope you'll join us with your questions and comments. Perhaps you will pose a question in French. In Champaign-Urbana, our telephone number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Susan Baldry earned a B.A. in French and Music at Northeastern Illinois University, an M.A. in French and Francophone Studies at the University of Illinois, and a Ph.D. in French and Quebec Studies at Northwestern University. She is fluent in French and Spanish. She is the editor of the Canadian Club of Chicago newsletter. As a foreign language consultant, Susan does foreign language and international studies workshops, trains teachers, and does foreign language program design. Again, the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Merci.
The 8th Francophonie Summit. Are these summits held on an annual basis, and when was the first?
The first one was in 1986 in Versailles in France, and they have been every 2 years. The one previous to this in 97 was in Hanoi, and it was at the Hanoi conference that Boutros-Ghali was named as the Secrétaire Général, the General Secretary of the Francophonie Organization, and that actually put the Francophonie Organization on the map as a political body that can attend meetings of the UN and can now advocate human rights improvements and programs around the world for French-speaking countries.
Hmm. Can you give us some idea of the countries around the world where French is spoken? You mentioned already Versailles, mm-hmm. which is France, of course, and this summit was held in Canada, and there was a summit that took place in Vietnam. And there are an amazing number of countries around
right.
the world where French is spoken.
Well, there were 52 nations that were represented, and I say nations, but I put that in quotation marks, in that Canada was the host country, and yet Quebec had its presence, and New Brunswick had its presence. And it's interesting because New Brunswick is the only officially bilingual province of Canada. And it was great to see the people in the city of Moncton that was our host city, although not the capital, because Fredericton is the capital of the province of New Brunswick, one of the four maritime provinces in eastern Canada. And the people in New Brunswick were very proud to be the host. This really put New Brunswick on the map. Mm. Their young prime minister, who's in his 30s, just newly elected in June of this year, said that this is a chance for the world to be watching New Brunswick. And it's a dynamic province, one that is very fragile in that it depends a lot on agriculture and the sea, and so pollutants that you may end up, you know, beginning in Southeast Asia or in Africa can end up on the shores of New Brunswick and the Bay of Fundy and totally change the ecosystem and economic outlook for this province.
What does it mean for New Brunswick to be officially bilingual?
Well, what I understand from Mayor Murphy, who is the mayor of Moncton, who was one of our hosts, and from Fernand Landry, who was the secretary general of the Francophonie Summit, what it means is that if anybody wants services, whether going to the dentist or buying tires for your car or putting your child in school or playing a musical instrument, you can request those services in French or in English. Now, that's true across all of Canada, but it doesn't always happen that way because you might be in a village, say in northern BC, and no one there speaks French as a dentist, and you might be francophone and want to have your daughter's teeth cleaned in French, and it may not happen. So The official ruling in New Brunswick is that those services are to be provided.
Yeah.
People are very proud about it. It's not a fighting anti- clashing kind of an issue. And the mayor of Moncton, Brian Murphy, said that here the families named Lyons or the Smiths or the Colmier or LeBlanc can live face-to-face. We play in English and in French, and this is part of the quality of life here in Moncton that we really love. And after the summit, we will still be Moncton, he said with a smile.
Now, the premier of Canada, Jean Chrétien, offered welcoming remarks, and you've written an article on the summit in which you quote the premier as saying, "To live in French in America is not easy. You have to really want to do it. You have to want to stay French in your heart." Talk with us about the significance of that statement.
I see the French language. I was born in Chicago and grew up learning French as of age 8. And I always wanted to live in French. And when I met a group of kids at a festival in New Brunswick, I told them that people in the streets of Chicago don't speak French. And they were so amazed. And they said, "Well, why not? What do you mean? You're speaking French to us here in our park at 7:30 in the morning in Memramcook. What's going on?" And they couldn't imagine that because they're in North America, too. And Celeste, you and I are both sitting in North America. But French is spoken by several million people across the entire continent. And that's it. And so it's really a desire. What Jean Chrétien meant, in my estimation, is that it's a question of wanting to survive, keeping the traditions alive. We just heard the music of Bottine Souriante. And really, in my opinion, it's a miracle that French is alive anywhere in North America because it is such a minority. And yet, as my Manitoban friend David Antonot said during the Winter Festival in Manitoba, "Je me sens majoritaire," I feel a majority here. And, you know, I think that was really true for the people of the 52 nations and certainly the province of New Brunswick this summer, in late August and early September during the summit, that people really did feel that French was a majority language. The one thing that all these first and third world countries have in common is that they are trying to live in French in their own way, and they have roots that went back somewhere from La France.
Now, we've mentioned already that the summit took place in New Brunswick, and New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Nova Scotia, Atlantic Canada, the Maritime Provinces, is home to 300,000 Acadians. Tell us about the Acadians.
What is an Acadian? We could talk forever about that. The Acadians are a people, un peuple. In other words, they really do not have a government. They don't have a boundary. They don't have a homeland. And when you say that there are many Acadians living in New Brunswick and throughout the Maritimes, there are also several hundred thousand Acadians living in Louisiana. You and I hear them called the Cajuns. And actually, that's the derivation from Acadien, the French word from Cajun. And in the mid-1700s, for 7 years, there was what was called La Grande Deportation, or Le Grand Dérangement. In other words, the Acadians, the Francophones, were not welcomed anymore in English Canada, and they were sent out. And it was a dispersal. It was really an attempt at genocide. I mean, it was like a Sarajevo. It was like a North Ireland. It was like the Middle East. Get out. You don't respect our language of English, and you don't go to our church, the Anglican Church. And this is really, really important. So when you talk to someone who's Acadian now, Antonin Maillet, the major author who is about 70 years old, the voice of Acadian people, when she says it's a miracle that we still speak French in our Acadian area, and yet we know our English language, we're always aware of our roots, we're always aware that somebody had to survive and then come back to Acadia, come back to New Brunswick after this dispersal. That's really the miracle. Those kids that speak and play baseball and play Nintendo in French, it's amazing that they do, and they do it on the homeland where their great-great-great-great-grandparents had to flee. And many of them were lost. And when they came back, they didn't realize that others were coming back, too. It was sort of a surprise rebirth. And they even refer to it as the Renaissance, la Renaissance Acadienne, the renaissance of building universities, colleges, getting the population together and making sure that people really don't forget that they had that French language in common.
So did the setting, the fact that Acadians were hosts, color or affect the summit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a surprise to the world, I think, all the world, meaning the Francophone world, but there were hundreds of thousands of people there. And it was a real surprise that the Acadians kept the language alive, that they were having university degrees at the University of Moncton given in French, that the director of the university, Monsieur Robichaud, was speaking French, was a guest of Jacques Chirac, was a guest of Jean Chrétien. This was an absolute miracle for the guests to see in a tiny, tiny town. Moncton is very small. Mm-hmm. In New Brunswick, there's many, many kilometers between each of the cities. It's not a megapolis like Chicago where you could say, well, of course, there's every nationality. It's not like that in Moncton. Moncton's main street is like a little lane here in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah. Right before we started talking this afternoon, you mentioned to me as the newscast was wrapping up that you had brought a little fable.
Hmm.
And maybe this would be an appropriate time to share it with the audience. And you haven't shared it with me yet. You just said a little bit about what it was about, and maybe this would be an appropriate time to share it with the audience.
I think so. And for the people who are listening who have had to keep a language alive, whether it's French, whether it's Spanish, whether it's Ukrainian, Polish, Hebrew, it doesn't matter what your language or your background is. I think that this will touch you, and it's a very special gift for me to give to our listeners today and to you, Celeste, because the author is a Quebecois named Georges Dor, and I met Georges at the beginning of my research on Quebec music in the mid-1980s. And he lives in Montreal, and he is someone who really, really cares about the French language and survival of his people. And this is a fable. It's called Le Fable Triste. I'll read it first in French and then in English. Fable Triste. Deux arbres dans le vent se disaient leur histoire. Deux vieux arbres savants s'échangeaient leur mémoire. L'un dit à l'autre, « Mon ami, ça fait 100 ans qu'on est ici. » La tête en l'air, au garde à vous, j'en ai assez, je veux partir comme font les oiseaux. L'autre lui répondit, Sorry, I don't speak French. Et ils moururent. And what Georges says in this sad fable, Le Fable Triste, is the following. Two trees in the wind tell each other their own history. Two old wise trees exchange their memories. One says to the other, My friend, we've been here 100 years, our head held high, at attention. I've really had enough. I want to leave like the birds do. And the other tree answered him, Sorry, I don't speak French. Or in this case, English. And they died. And I think that this fable really portrays the fragility of any culture. When I was at the Sommet de la Francophonie, what hit me is that any group, any cultural or linguistic group that wanted to survive and that really had to face threats of annihilation was a part of this summit. And it brought tears to my eyes when I listened to Boutros Boutros-Ghali talk about human rights and these children who told me, you know, our job at this fair is to wave our Acadian flags way, way, way far away from the stand where Chirac, the president of France, is speaking, so we can show him our flag and we can say, au revoir, thanks for coming to Acadie. This is big stuff for these children. Mm. And I told them, you know, in 10 years, 15 years, you'll be the organizers of this for your village. You'll invite the future Chirac to your place here in North America. And they looked at me in silence. Total disbelief, but it's true.
Mm. We're talking this afternoon with Susan Baldry. She attended the 8th Francophonie Summit, which took place last month in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. And we're talking with her this afternoon about Francophonie, about issues raised during the summit. We'll hear about the theme of the summit. This year it was youth. Well, we're also hearing something about the people around the world who speak French this afternoon. This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. If you'd like to join the conversation in French or in English, please do so. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers waiting to talk with us. We're going to go first to the toll-free line, a caller on line 4 in Westchester. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Francophonie is not a term most Americans are familiar with. I assume it's an organization that's to further the French language. Is that correct?
I appreciate your comment. I had my father, who does not know any French except bonjour and merci, to read my articles that I wrote about this experience, and your point is a good one. And he said, honey, no one knows that word. And I realized as I've been talking to people in English about this experience that the word phony in English is a very awful word because we don't use that word and it connotes something not very good. Whereas the word, the actual translation, la francophonie, everyone who is French-speaking knows the French word la francophonie. So it was almost, I don't want to say a betrayal, but a very strange feeling for me to put this word into English. And yet in the English press in Canada, that's the word that's used. So I think that because Canada is dealing every day with French, francophone, and Anglo-Anglophone issues, politically and culturally in terms of their different populations, I think that that's why they know about it. And we here in the States really haven't seen that word. So thank you for that comment.
To what extent is French spoken outside of France and Canada and a little bit in Louisiana? How many people speak French? Do you know in the millions?
In Africa, North and West Africa, most of the countries that speak French, well, the ones that do, are all former colonies of France, and most of them receive their independence, most of them in peace, although Algeria in the 1950s through the early 60s had a war that was quite bloody, and in fact, for the French that had to fight the Algerian War, it was very much, if you talk to those that fought the war, it's like talking to somebody in the States who had to go to Vietnam, and many of them did not want to go. They said, why are we here? This is not our war. So these are the issues, and these countries, as well as Vietnam and Laos, the Seychelles off of the coast of in the Indian Ocean, the Eastern African, Madagascar, these are the countries that were represented. We also had representation from the island of Haiti. And
Haiti, too.
Yes, in Haiti. And Haiti, it's French and French Creole, La Creole, which is a mixture, in a sense, I use that word pretty loosely, of African dialects from the slaves that came over from Western Africa. But in Canada, in every single province, there are French-speaking people, and there are French immersion schools where kids can go to school and have all their subjects, math, science, music, PE, all in French, if they are put in what's called une école d'immersion, an immersion school.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And let's go on to our next caller on line one, a caller in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I grew up in Châteauguay, just south of Montreal, so I'm really enjoying your talk this afternoon.
Merci. Vous parlez français?
Ah oui.
Ok. Ben, on peut causer en français, si vous voulez.
Je suis gênée.
Ah, mais non, faut pas.
Est-ce qu'il y avait des Indiens à Nouveau-Brunswick qui viennent de Québec?
Excellente question. The question is, were there Indians, Native Americans, in New Brunswick that came from Quebec? In fact, the presence was wonderful. We saw dances, we saw ceremonies, there were education stands for Native Americans, not only for New Brunswick, but all the way up in Nunavut, the third territory that was created this year on April the 1st. That has 25,000 population, and the majority, as we know them, are the Inuit, or sometimes called Eskimo, but that's not a very positive, it's a pretty pejorative word. But to answer your question, yes, the Cree were represented, the Montagnais were represented, the Odanak, and so there were many, many Native representations. Yeah. As a speaking, a vocal part of the culture of New Brunswick, a voice to be heard, a voice to be reckoned with in terms of education and political input.
Wow. I used to work as a nurse with the Montagnais in Chefferville and La Romaine. So that's really interesting to hear that. Okay, thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
hey,
bye.
Where do you come from?
Chicago.
Ah, really? Oh, I heard that at the beginning, and I wasn't too sure. Could you give me an address for that Canada Club, Chicago Canada Club?
Sure. Can we give that off air?
Yeah. Would you like to give it on the air?
Yes. It's called the Canadian Club of Chicago, and it's an international organization for Canadians living somewhere outside of Canada and for people, American or other, who do business with Canada or, like us, have fallen in love with Canada in terms of the people and tourism and just as a wonderful, safe, gorgeous, happy place to be. And the address is 20 North Wacker, W-A-C-K-E-R Drive in Chicago, 60611. And we have programs. We'll have former U.S. Ambassador Blanchard, the former governor of Michigan, coming up to Chicago October 21st. We just had Canadian Thanksgiving last night. Donc, bonne fête de l'Action Grâce. And lots of different activities, cultural and political and economic forums all through the year. And we're really trying to get university people involved across the world. So give them a call, and they'll send you information. And ask them to send the last newsletter. You'll like what I wrote.
Is there any information from this group about the French thing that just went on in New Brunswick?
The summit? In the issue of the journal that is going to come out in late November, then you'll have an article and a whole slew of photos that I've done.
Oh, great.
So
okay.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
Merci
Bye-bye.
Beaucoup. Okay.
Bye-bye. Au revoir.
Au revoir, merci.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. That's right. Yesterday was Canadian Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they celebrate in October, round about the midpoint
right.
of October.
So it was on the Monday that is controversially called here Columbus Day in the States.
Right, right.
And it's lovely because it's apple picking time and harvest time and it's not too cold.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the cultural activities that were part of the summit. What all was going on?
Oh, you know, Celeste, my days up there were 18-hour days. You just didn't want to go to sleep because you'd miss something. There, the group that we'll be hearing in a little while, Barachois, performed, and there were artists everywhere. There's a wonderful rap group called Dubonique that is originally from Haiti and is performing in Quebec. In fact, has won several Quebec Music Prizes and played on Quebec's national holiday, La Saint-Jean, this past June. And they're rappers. And I interviewed the lead singer, and I said, you know, what is this rapping in francophonie, in francophone, in French? And he said, you know, our songs are songs that represent the worries of children and of young people now. Crime, violence, dreams, deception. And this is what we're singing, and this is why everybody loves our music. And it's true. I mean, if you listen to the rap songs across the world, and you think maybe of the troubadours, you know, hundreds of years ago, and the griot in West Africa, a griot tells the stories that people need to hear. And so Dubonique performed for the heads of state at what was called Le Village de la Francophonie, and it was a village of Francophone cultures, and this was a free fair, sort of like our state fair would mm-hmm. be down here in Illinois. And they had booths from all the different Francophone areas of the world. They had music. They had some African ladies making braids in children's hair, face painting. They recognized some of the Pan American Game winners from Canada who were received by Sheila Copps, the Minister of Heritage in Canada, and Boutros-Ghali. So they had all these activities that were free for the community. And this was great because the attendees were not all Francophone. There are people in New Brunswick who speak only English.
Right.
And, in fact, Moncton has both languages, but where we were in the city of Dieppe, which is right next to Moncton, is about 85% Francophone, and the city across the river, the Petit Kodiak River, Riverview, is 85% Anglophone, and yet they all live around Moncton and do business together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a little pearl of a culture that's yeah. really exciting.
Well, I was reading or hearing about a gentleman in New Brunswick, or perhaps it was Nova Scotia or PEI, Prince Edward Island, who has been working on genealogy of Acadian mm-hmm. folks. And interestingly enough, his name has been Anglified.
Ah.
He is Simon White, but of course his family were the LeBlancs. So once upon a time, he would have been Simon.
Mm-hmm. Simon Leblanc.
Leblanc.
Whoa. This is amazing that you're saying this, because when I interviewed Antonine Maillet, this wonderful, wonderful writer who has really re-given a voice to the Francophone people up in New Brunswick, she was talking about the miracle of the survival of her culture, and she said to me the following. She said, "To have," and she said it in French, but I'll translate, "to have the summit here is an enormous recognition of the Acadian people. Acadia is a people. It is not a country. We're happy to be able to say that because we've survived by the strength of our soul and of our cause, which is indeed a noble one. It is indeed that of the affirmation of oneself, and all of that in French, en français. Not only our language, but our way of speaking the language, our intonation, our style, our images, our humor, our way of being. And that's indeed what a people is all about. It's the idea of remaining who we are." And then she went on to talk to me about the different names, because I said, well, what are some of the names? I know the Quebecois names, like we would have Smith and Jones, and in Quebec, there are certain names. And so she said, well, you know, she said, it's really a fragile piece for our culture when a Leblanc loses his French language and his kids change their name officially to white. Mm-hmm. And the loss of a lot of Leblanc to white, and this is the example that she gave, so this is so interesting that you asked this question this way. And she said, or if a bois vert becomes a green, she said, a few of those, if they're not interested in our culture anyway, it's no big deal. But if we start to lose a lot of them, what's going to happen to us? And the fear of Acadie and the fear of Quebecois are to become like some of the vanished Louisiana Cajuns, those who don't speak any French anymore and who can't talk to their grandparents who are in their 70s and 80s. That's really, really scary.
Yeah. Well, this man definitely was very interested in his culture. He's working on a multi-volume genealogy of Acadians. But it was at some point in the past when apparently the family felt the pressure to change to English. And now he is remaining Simon White, as I suppose hanging on to that part of his family's history.
Yep.
And also he also mentioned that it was a way to set himself, you know, of all the Simon LeBlancs that are in a particular community, there can be many, many, many LeBlancs. Mm-hmm. So he said it was a way for him and his work to sort of peek out.
Absolutely.
If you know what I mean.
Absolutely. So. And that is very true, because if you go to the cemeteries in New Brunswick, in the French-speaking area of Acadie, the name that you see, the number one name that you see all through the cemetery, and I went to the Memrancook one after Chirac's visit, was Leblanc. Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And rows of Leblanc. So it's a very important name. Maybe that is his way of surviving. You know, one of the issues that was dealt with, obviously, at the summit was the idea that everyone says you can go anywhere in the world and speak English. English is the international language. And that's true if you speak English and if you understand the differences, the cultural nuances of the cultures that you're talking to. You speak to a Japanese person in English, but if you know about Japanese culture, your business deal and your friendships and your trust will be a lot different than if you just go in English and have your laptop there and say, here, sign on the bottom line, and you don't know what makes a Japanese person tick, or a Tokyo person versus someone living out in the sticks. This is the difference. And so the same challenge is very much alive for Francophone peoples. Mm. If you're from Senegal and you speak French, but you also speak three other dialects, you understand better a kid from Côte d'Ivoire who is dealing with the same thing and who has three grandparents that speak different dialects. That kid has 6, 8, 10 languages. And then here in the States, we're dealing with, well, should we take 2 years of another language, and what should it be? So it's very, very different. And yet I'm talking about countries that much of whose population are third world countries, third world cultures, where there's not an internet connection in the classroom, where there's not a population that even goes to school. And they're talking today with the 6 billionth baby being born last night, the population of, you know, how many people can afford to send their children to school? And what kind of education are they getting? And this is really a very, very important issue. And so the idea that this year's summit revolved around la jeunesse, youth, was extremely important. And one of the dimensions that I thought was very interesting at the summit was what they call the University Olympiad. And there were hundreds of students all around the Francophone world who had put together projects on the internet and they were chosen by juries, and it was like an Olympics, if you will. And the 15 finalists were had to present their projects to Boutros Boutros-Ghali at the University of Moncton. And I went around listening to their presentations, and there was a young lady from Morocco who had developed some health plans for getting people out into the sticks, into the brush area, in the hills, in the desert, nurses and people to educate parents about vaccinations and about clean water. You know, if you have no clean water at all, it's really hard to go into a village and say, you all must have clean water, if there is no such resourcing for that. And yet sometimes we go in and we just expect that people are going to jump and respond that way.
So in the Francophone world now, is there a commitment on the part of, say, a relatively wealthy nation to help Francophones in another part of the world where water is an issue, where healthcare is an issue, where people don't have computers in their homes, or maybe there are no computers in a particular community?
Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge that was discussed at the summit. You know, the summit only lasted 3 days, and yet the work has been going on for 2 years since Hanoi in 97, and frankly for the last 16 years or so. But your question has been decided in French of not creating a two-leveled francophonie. Mm-hmm. And this is a major fear, that France and Canada should not become the elite, and Belgium and Switzerland, and say, okay, the rest of you, you know, you do your sub-Saharan stuff, and we're out here, and, you know, we may meet every couple of years. This is a major, major risk, and it's a commitment on the part of the Francophonie as a social and political body now to say, wait a minute, we are here to share resources. We are here to develop funds and go into villages and go into towns and set up exchanges. And the feeling amongst the leaders was that we need to address these questions and needs from the youth, because they are our next leaders. And it may sound like a cliche, but it's true. And in countries of Africa, where the populations are much faster growing than, say, in the Western world, as we learned this morning on the news, this is a very, very scary issue. We must address these. We cannot just say, well, let's let the pygmies move from village to village. We need to say, well, what is the safety of their elephants that they're eating? And what decisions do we make in Europe that are going to affect their lives? And yet I haven't thought about pygmies since I was in fifth grade. But there I was, faced with one of the 15 finalists who were working on survival of pygmy groups who live in peace, much more peace than we have.
Let's talk with another caller on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Ici Fred Jenkins.
Ah, dis donc. Bonjour,
bonjour.
Ça va bien?
Ça va bien.
Je suis contente de t'entendre.
Moi aussi.
Oui.
Écoute, j'apprécie beaucoup ton intervention.
Mm-hmm, merci.
J'ai aussi une question à te poser.
Oui, bien sûr.
J'ai lu dans Le Monde qu'il y avait quand même quelques oppositions à l'idée de que l'organisation devrait s'occuper des droits de l'homme.
Merci donc, beaucoup, oui.
Mais je n'ai pas beaucoup de détails. Est-ce que tu peux m'en fournir?
Oui, oui.
Et I think I know the heart of this question. Mm-hmm. And it's a great one. I want to thank you for calling. And keep going, keep conversing,
right.
And then Susan will translate.
OK. Ben d'abord, je peux te dire qu'il y avait un sommet qui s'appelait le sommet parallèle qui a eu lieu, figurez-vous à tout le public qui nous écoute, que ce sommet donc parallèle qu'on l'a nommé a eu lieu dans le sous-sol d'une église à Moncton, à comme 2 kilomètres du sommet, enfin officiel quoi. Ça veut dire qu'il fallait une voiture pour se déplacer, il fallait savoir où, dans quel sous-sol. Eh ben là où on a eu Amnesty International qui a été présent, aussi un groupe qui s'appelle Reporters sans frontières, donc Reporters en anglais. Aussi Oxfam, qui s'occupe de la pollution des eaux et de la protection, d'autres groupes pour la protection de droits de l'homme et surtout des droits des femmes et de l'enfant. Entre parenthèses, à Luxembourg au mois de février prochain, il va y avoir un sommet international pour les droits de la femme. Il y avait aussi des gens qui s'occupaient des mines antipersonnelles, landmines. Et c'était très, très important. Et eux, ils étaient très présents également avec des pancartes pendant la cérémonie d'ouverture du sommet et pendant tous les départs des officiels, des délégations et tout ça. Mais on a mis l'accent un peu là-dessus. Ça dépendait des hommes de la presse qui voulaient en parler ou pas. Mais effectivement, la question des droits de l'homme, surtout en ce qui concerne Boutros-Boutros-Ghali, qui, lui, veut tout faire pour la protection des gens.
C'est ça.
Merci beaucoup. C'était très, très important. Et en fait, ils ont, ça dépend de qui tu as lu, tu vois.
Oui.
Et d'ailleurs, il y a un slogan bosniaque d'un enfant qui a été très très blessé justement par une mine antipersonnelle, qui a dit « Si tu as survécu à la guerre, tâche de survivre à la paix. » Alors c'est incroyable quand même.
I will translate for our listeners. This is a professor from the University of Illinois, Fred Jenkins, who's calling, who's a major leader in French and French teaching and French program development here in the United States, a real important friend of Francophonie. And his question was that in Le Monde, which is one of the French major newspapers from France, they talked a little bit about a parallel summit, which was called Le Sommet Parallèle. And in fact, there was such a meeting going on. It was held in the basement of a church about 2 kilometers from the main center, so you had to have a car and know which basement to head to. And it was run by several groups, especially Amnesty International, Oxfam Canada, which is responsible for purifying the land and waters, Projet Acadie for protection of Acadia, a reporters group that is sort of one for the people called Reporters Without Borders, and an anti-landmine group. And these particular groups had their meetings every single day talking about human rights issues, talking about abuse of children, abuse of women, lack of education, lack of safety in the world, and were saying, look, we need to make sure that the official body of Francophonie indeed addresses these issues. And one of the major slogans that was used, that's just a real heart-wrenching slogan, is, and I translate, of a Bosnian child who was maimed by a landmine. And Canada is one of the major leaders of the world who has signed and really done a lot of legislation for anti-landmine consciousness rising of our population. And the slogan goes as such, if you have survived war, please try to survive peace. And I think that this is a real important message. And this parallel summit was present absolutely everywhere, including at the very end of the departures of the summit. Thanks for this question.
Yes,
very important.
Thanks for all that extra information.
Merci. Too. A bientôt.
Thank you for the call. That was a wonderful question. I want to thank him for calling because that's something I wanted to bring up. In this article that you've written that I read prior to the program today, Susan, you quote the Secretary General of the Francophonie, Boutros-Ghali, is saying, Francophonie is here to do what others will never do in its place. It is here to promote the respect of the cultural and linguistic diversity. Yet, given what you've just said, one kind of wonders about this. Francophonie does not exclude countries not respectful of human rights.
This, you know, Celeste, this was such a major issue, and people in the streets were talking about it. Delegates were visitors, tourists, officials and non-official people of where does an organization such as Francophonie draw the line? And it was said over and over again that, and Jean Chrétien said this at the end, and it took a lot of guts on his part because he was, you know, between a rock and a hard place, so to speak, there is not legislation in the body of Francophone nations that can say because of a certain country's lack of respect of human rights, we can exclude this country. And in fact, I'm sure that that's going to come up in 2001, the next summit will be held in Beirut. And so there is a question of fragility of a country there and culture and question of human rights. And the people of Lebanon want to be the hosts, and it's very important for the Francophone organization now to be able to say, okay, if 32, and I'm quoting because I don't, you know, this is what I read, 32 out of 52 countries are having human rights problems and allegations against, you know, safety of people and survival and of human people. What are the issues? What can we do? And as of now, there is nothing. There's not like a constitution that says the Francophone summit people can indeed exclude somebody. I think that these questions will continue to be discussed. Certainly the parallel summit was not any surprise to the people who were the Francophone leaders. And I think that when you sit down with the different ministers and the delegates that were there, they all wanted protection. And yet, what do you do if somebody walks in, you know, through the reception line and you know that there are atrocities going on in their country? I mean, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah. Well, what are the pros and cons when people discuss this issue? What do they say on the one hand for including people, everybody, and then for, you know, on the other side, what do they say about, you know, we should exclude nations that are not respectful of human rights.
Well, as of now, there's not been a decision to our mandate to definitely exclude these nations. I think that that question, I know that question, will be discussed in much more detail in the next 2 years, and frankly, it won't be done in 2 years. But I think that in order to answer a question or comment or observation like that, the Francophone leaders would say that the origin of the organization, which was only 41 nations in 1986 when the Versailles Summit was first held, the first summit in Versailles, France, that the origin was to group together countries who have le français comme partage, the French language in common, that they share the French language. This was the premise to belonging to this organization. Some people have said, well, it's kind of like a club. And then we talked earlier about that it can't become an elite versus third world club. So there are these challenges. It's a young organization. Any of the leaders will tell you that. We are young. We are changing. And that's why I think they really wanted to get the youth involved. It was amazing to me to be at an international conference where, as part of the opening ceremony, besides Kofi Annan and Boutros Ghali and Jean Chrétien, they had teenagers from different countries around the world talking about what kids need in terms of education, what kids need in terms of cultural expansion, exchange programs, business development, that if they are to learn to compete in the world economically and take the, you know, follow our steps, that they really need to be heard. And this was absolutely amazing when you think of 52 heads of state listening to teenage kids saying, on veut, we want, we need. It was great.
Let's talk with another caller. On line one in Champagne, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Je suis français, I'm French here, living in Champagne, you know.
Ah, okay.
And I like to say, je voudrais dire que, first of all, WILL plays a lot of French classical player, composer,
mm-hmm.
and it's very good.
Great.
And I'm very surprised, sometimes I even can listen to more French composer than I did in France.
Tiens.
Je ne sais pas si vous êtes étonné, mais ça, j'ai vraiment remarqué ça très, très fortement.
Eh bien, tant mieux pour la station ici, hein.
And what do you think about the fact that French fight it English very much? And what do you think of that Frenchiness over there? I mean, I think it was right, because here people are fighting for English, and English is very strong in France.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of that? And for the last thing, I'm sorry, I would like to have the name of the caller you had before. The teacher of the mm-hmm. UFI?
Sure, he was Fred Jenkins, Jenkins, and he was the former executive director of AATF, the American Association of Teachers of French. You could contact him at the French Department at 2090 Foreign Languages Building here at U of I.
Okay,
Fred
thank
Jenkins,
you.
Yes. And your question about the presence of English, la présence de la langue anglaise en France, c'était ça?
Oui. Yeah, les Français n'ont pas l'air très énergiques pour défendre leur propre langue en France.
Mm-hmm.
Et ça m'a beaucoup étonné.
Ah oui, okay, the question is that many French people are not necessarily interested in defending the survival, if I understand right, of French language in France.
Why?
It's a very interesting question. People say to me, you know, when you go to Quebec or you go to Louisiana or you go to Ivory Coast, do you understand the French? Do they really speak French there? Do you understand the French of Acadie, people said to me. And I don't understand why people ask me that, because it seems to me, number one, when you listen to another language, if you're really actively listening, it's because you want to understand the people. If you don't have that part in your heart and your gut, it doesn't matter if they're going to say exactly what you, if you wrote their speech, that won't make any difference. So it's a question of le vouloir, of wanting to listen. And then a bigger part of that is in France, that there is, you see a lot more English words, bon weekend and
right.
le parking and le fast food. And in Quebec, where it's a very, very fragile culture, and in French-speaking New Brunswick, where it's very fragile, or French-speaking Manitoba or Francophone Ontario, when you're in those cultures that are surrounded by millions of people who speak English as their first language, if you have a word parking in there, it's like taking a knife and cutting a part of the French heritage away from that Quebecois person. You're taking it away little by little by little, and they can't afford to lose it.
But maybe then we should send the French people in Quebec and the Quebecois people in France.
Bah, c'est pas mauvais comme idée. Merci pour la question. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup pour le programme. Au revoir.
Okay. Merci, monsieur. Au revoir.
Thank you for the call this afternoon. We're out of time. It just flew by. Thank you so much. And I hope, let's have you back on the program and let's talk about foreign language instruction. Mm-hmm. It's been wonderful having you here, Susan.
Merci beaucoup. And I'd like to thank WILL and you, Celeste, a lover of New Brunswick, and the Canadian Club and Air Canada for helping to sponsor me, Journal Français, and everybody who listened in and who cared enough to learn something new about la francophonie. Merci.
Susan Baldry has been our guest this afternoon. Let's go out here with just a pinch of music, something that Susan brought along. What group is this?
This is Barachois, and there are four performers, two gals and two guys, and they are from Prince Edward Island, and their goal has been to recreate and really re-energize the songs of the past that they learned from going to an accordion or fiddle player or a spoon player and saying, hey, teach me this, and let me see how your feet move. And so everybody, get your spoons out and sit and do some foot tapping as you say Barachois. Thank you.